You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9am to 12 midday.
We are in 2019. The 100th year of the anniversary, rather, of the start of the War of Independence. Some commemorations have already taken place. And my next guest has for quite some time now been collecting memories of the war as it affected the people of County Clare. You'll know Jim Graney, historian, Dr. Tomás McAmara. Tomás, good morning to you.
Hi, Gavin.
And thanks very much for joining us to tell us about your new book, The Time of the Tans. It's an interesting title. I've got to say that, first of all, to be...
Yeah, and it's a very conscious title, Gavin, because, you know, whenever I started documenting these stories, and, you know, I would have, at the age of 16, started writing down stories that I was hearing, and then over time, you know, it began to record them. But I was always hearing that period of the War of Independence referred to as the time of the tans, particularly from people who were children at the time, or people who were maybe referring to their parents who may have been involved directly or who experienced it. It was always, in my experience, referred to as the time of the tens, and that I think it tells us a number of things. It tells us, at one level, how much of a landmark it was in the consciousness of the Irish people and in the 20th century, that it was given its own time, you know, and, you know, when it stands to reason, given the level of violence, the level of turmoil, the level of transformation that came about as a consequence of that period, that it would be the landmark in the minds of the Irish people.
2 points about it. First of all, when you say, I don't know how the title says, the tans, it's obviously referring to the black tans, but it's kind of a pejorative term. You mean much more than just that, the auxiliaries and other English forces who would have been in Ireland at the time?
Yes, exactly, because, you know, people often try and pick that apart now, and they'll say, well, it wasn't all just the black and tans. There were, as you rightly say, the auxiliaries, regular army, RIC, all involved in the violence. But in my experience, over hundreds of recordings, people aren't ignorant of that. They just can label the British side of that conflict as tans, because the black and tans, because of their violence, of their indiscipline, etc., and because of the reputation that grew up around them, became symbolic of that whole British repression during that time.
And it is also, as a word, tan, being used at time as kind of an insult towards people who are English, who have nothing to do with anything that we're talking about this morning. Might you get a bit of negative feedback, I wonder, respect to the title?
I wouldn't have thought so, certainly, and if I do, I'll be well able to defend
it.
But I think, particularly when you're referencing the hundreds of people who understood it as that was their temporal sort of naming of that experience, was the time of the tans. The black and tans were very real, and no amount of revision can change that. They were violent, they were indisciplined, they weren't the only ones responsible for that, and in fact, the people who were ultimately responsible were the ones who sent them over. But irrespective of all of that, you know, that was a real experience. People experienced it. It was very traumatic. And the negativity that surrounds the name tans is perfectly justified. It's, of course, not justified to describe some English person as a tan just because, you know, black and tans did 100 years ago. But I feel to try and ignore the reality of past violence to worry about contemporary sensitivities would be wrong.
Okay. You, as part of this, have been collecting memories and stories from people since you were a teenager, 20 plus years?
Yeah, well, we're not plus.
20 years, I'm not that old. But it's been a labour of love. There's a lot of work that's gone into this. And I know it's the type of history that you yourself are really interested in. And instead of having you talk about it, we're going to share, we've got a couple of stories here. We've got Millie Enright and Nora. Pick one and tell me about them.
Yeah, well, let's start maybe with Nora Canavan. And, you know, for your listeners, some of you will be aware of Nora Canavan, but Nora was 108 years of age when she passed away in 2016. I recorded her at the age of 104 and in 2012, and in the clip you're about to hear, she first reflects broadly on the black and tans and on that period, and the second clip, which runs on, is reflecting on the moment of the Monreal ambush, which was the 18th of December 1920. And what I would say to your listeners is listen to her voice and the way she talks.
I know the time of the tans, it was an awful time. God, you wouldn't know, there was the night they'd knock on the door and they'd come in and search your house, and if there was a spark of light seen, the windows had to be barricaded, covered up, no light to be seen. And that boy, the Murphys, we were talking of the last day, that was very sad. wasn't it, sitting down reading a book, was it, he was when he was shot through the window. Oh, God, it took an awful effect on them, did. My father's head broke down that time. Oh, you'd be afraid of your life, sure. And the 10 or 12 lorries go from Innes Diamond down to Innes every morning. And they'd be banging shots at both sides. Oh, I remember the evening before we came in from school. I remember my father and mother, there wasn't a word out of them. And they didn't tell us anything. But we knew in the morning what was wrong. And we were all collected into one room in case the deadly shots come through the windows or the doors. The stone walls were the safest. And my father had to go to see the cattle, and he was on his way back. And he went and shelter from a shower. And there was a bullet put through the tree where he was, over his head. Oh, my, it was a bad time.
It was a bad time. The late Nora Canavan there, speaking as in one of these stories that have been formed part of The Time of the Tans, the new book by Dr. Tomás Macamara. You talked about the way that the way in which people told these stories, and we heard that just even there right at the end, but at other times in that clip from Nora as well, Tomás, in how maybe it brings home the gravity, the seriousness, and how that time still registers with those who lived through it. It's maybe hard to convey in a book. We can hear it there in the clip to a certain extent, but that's the story you're trying to tell here.
Exactly right, Gavin. And you know, from an oral historian's point of view, it's really critical to try and register the way in which, you know, the story is communicated. Even the body language can be significant, and you can't represent that in a transcription. So the oral historian has to try and capture a sense of the way it was conveyed. And you know, I sat in front of older people all over County Clare, and you would often, particularly people lived through it, like Nora, you know, their whole body language would almost transform when they began to talk about that time.
Tense up.
They would tense up. You know, sometimes it might be tense up in terms of the recollection of the fear. At other times, it might be out of anger, and you could have a very real, you know, tangible sense of anger from some of the people when they're recalling what was done. As I say, other times it might be fear. So it's really important, and Nora is a fantastic representation of that, because I was making the point to you there that even in her breathing, you know, as she's reflecting back on it, you get a sense of the, you know, the feeling of fear and of volatility and emotion from the time. And that, I suppose, is characteristic of what can be captured using oral history as your process of documenting that time.
Absolutely, indeed. It also hammers home what this era was, and I think it's very important that that type of story be told. I mean, it's backed up by fact, it's backed up by the dates and the who's and the what's and the where's, but to recount people's experiences, it's the lived experience, it's the lived tale, and the window to do that is rapidly closing.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and it was closing. It was something I was very conscious of, even as a young enough teenager. I was somehow conscious of it. I don't know how I could articulate that at the time, but I was aware that there were older people in my own townland of Ballymalone, you know, who should be recorded, and their memories were valuable. And over time, I became increasingly committed to that notion. But what's really critical there, and you touched on it, Gavin, is that we often present history. And history is often written in kind of chronological sequences, a nice linear sort of step-by-step accounts of what happened. But history is experienced, it's felt. So when an ambush occurred, or a black and tan raid occurred, or a burning of a house occurred, people weren't thinking of themselves as on a particular date during a particular sequence of events. They felt the emotion first, they felt the experience first. So if we're to tell the history, we have to tell the experience and tell the feelings and the human impact of that. And again, that's enfolded within our memory.
And I think we all do that, but obviously not maybe on something as serious as this, but it's the way I remember things is sure. Kind of where I was and how I felt at the time of it. What do you hope readers will get from your book?
Well, I really hope, in a sense that first of all, they'll get the value of these people's memories, because that's always been my aim. You know, I didn't start recording this to publish a book. I started to record that memory because I felt it was going to be lost and that it was critical to our understanding of our own collective past to have that memory and that understanding and knowledge recorded. I think it would be important if people appreciated as well the way in which it doesn't have to be the big moments, it doesn't have to be the big landmark figures. Mm. You know, history can be, for example, you know, I communicated with an elderly nun in Australia whose two memories of her father, a man called Anthony McGuinn, a member of the West Clare IRA that would not be very well known. Her two memories were, one, him breaking up a fight between herself and her brother over an apple when she was six. And the other was a month later when she was pulled out from behind a heavy curtain in her home in West Clare, near Coor, and lifted up to kiss her father in his coffin before he was taken down to Coor Church. Now, the reason he was in his coffin was it would seem a direct consequence of the privations he suffered during the War of Independence. He was 41 years of age. That's part of history, you know. Yeah. That's part of it, and it's supposed to expand our notion of what that period was like, and what the impact sure. of that period was like.
We'll hear another story which will sum that up in a moment, but before that, your book, The Time of the Tans, an Oral History of the War of Independence in County Clare, very much a local book to emphasise that as well. It's being launched this coming Friday night at the Templegate Hotel from 8 o'clock by Katrina Crowe. Is it available yet? Or will
yeah, it's available at the moment, but there will be copies available on the night, and you know, I would really encourage anybody across the county. I've gotten huge support, Gavin, and from Clare FM I want to acknowledge as well.
Thank
from
you very much.
Well, genuinely, for a lot of years you've given great support to me in my work, but right across the county there's so many people who've been so good to me in my work, and I want to invite anyone who's listening to wants to come along on the night, would they be more than welcome.
This Friday, Templegate Hotel, 8 o'clock. Tell me finally about Millie Enright.
Yeah, Millie, I only unfortunately got the chance to record Millie once, back in 2008, in her native Kilmehel. And Millie was a wonderful lady, 94 years of age at the time. She passed away in 2010, and she had a tremendous ability to tell story, a lot of through humour in many cases. The interview itself was a broader life story interview, but within it I encountered this revelation of memory of the 18th of April 19 and 20, when the local IRA unit, members of the 2nd Battalion of the West Clare IRA, ambushed a group of RIC men leaving Kilmehel Church. Very violent moment, which led to the death of Sergeant Patrick Carroll of the RIC and also Sean Breen, a 22-year-old local IRA volunteer. And the memory you're about to hear is Millie's recollection of the moments after that incident.
Tomás, thanks for joining us this morning. Here is Millie Enright.
Women came in now and they said, and my mother said, "What's on?" And I had heard this rifle shooting or whatever it was, even below we had heard it, but we didn't know what it meant. And before, immediately after that, a whole lot of them, say, a platoon of the lads over, if you call it a platoon, ran past the house and they had the rifles at the ready in their hands, and we hadn't ever seen that. And I said to Billy, I was talking, of course, "Billy, why are they bringing why are they bringing the guns?" I never saw, and they were all running, full tilt. And then we could hear like the noise and didn't know what it meant. And they said, "There's a man killed." They said, there's a man killed. "There may be two of them killed. We'll be burned down in Kilmehel today." And they were just hoping that they'd get home going in that direction before they'd anyone meet them. They'd be killed too if they were on the roads. They'd take them as being part of the ambush or whatever.
The late Millie Enright there. Tomás will be launching that book, The Time of the Tans, this coming Friday night at the Templegate Hotel.
You're listening to a Clare FM podcast. Morning Focus broadcasts weekdays from 9 a.m. to 12 midday.